episode 736 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Valiant Sunday episode, and today I'm going to be talking about a few different titles. I'm going to give you my thoughts on Punk Mambo number 1, which I got to check out recently. I'm also going to talk a little bit about Bloodshot Rising Spirit, which issue 3 came out a while back. I haven't mentioned it on air. And then issue 4 drops this week. So I'm not real happy with the title, but I'm going to kind of go a little more in depth into issue 3. And then we'll talk a little bit more generally about issue 4 and kind of where I think the title is headed. But before that, let me, as I mentioned, talk about Punk Mambo number 1. I got to check out the first issue. It was really... It was really good, actually. I think I've mentioned before that I'm not a huge fan of Punk Mambo, but I think that the story that Cullen Bunn is telling, the art by Adam Gorham, are exceptional. And, you know, they're two creators who I have a lot of faith in, and I think Valiant has a lot of faith in as well. So it doesn't really surprise me that I enjoyed the first issue as much as I did. I think that it's opening up avenues and stories that we haven't really seen in Valiant before. It's, and if you absolutely don't want to know anything about it at all, like, I get it, totally understand, whatever, and I'm not, you know, me, I'm not one to really spoil, but I do want to mention something that I think is really interesting and that I think it's something that I want to learn more about, and something that hasn't really been explored that much in Valiant at all. Maybe a little bit in the Shadow Man series, the recent Shadow Man series that was excellent from Andy Diggle. And what I'm talking about is the Loa. You know, I know in the old Shadow Man title, there was a lot more of the voodoo aspect. In the new Shadow Man title, there hasn't been... In either of them, there hasn't been a whole lot of exploration of sort of the voodoo culture, the voodoo religion. And I feel like part of that is because of the introduction of Punk Mambo as a character, because that's even more her purview, even more of the world that she lives in, as opposed to the world that Shadow Man or Jack Boniface lives in, because he doesn't really understand it, right? He understands magic to some extent. And obviously his companion Alyssa is a little more versed in voodoo, but it's not something that has really been explored that much in the Shadow Man title. And I'm not sure what the reasoning for that is, or if it's just been that the writers and the stories they wanted to tell haven't coincided with that. But if you really want to explore voodoo, then of course you're going to do it with a Mambo. And of course you're going to do it in terms of Valiant with the character Punk Mambo. And so, as I said, I wasn't really looking forward to this title that much. Then when I heard Cullen Bunn was writing it, I had Adam Gorham on the show to talk about it, and everything that Adam had to say, just how excited and passionate he was about the project, I started thinking, okay, well, you know, I was always planning on picking up the first issue and checking it out. But just Adam's excitement for the title had me starting to anticipate it, starting to really want to check it out. And again, the addition of Cullen Bunn as the writer, I'm like, yeah, okay, it should be pretty good, right? And so sure enough, I read the first issue, and it's incredible art by Adam Gorham. I think it's some of the best work that he's done. And I think Cullen Bunn gives Punk Mambo a very authentic voice. Like, she sounds like she's always sounded. You know, he's clearly done his homework. He's clearly read what other writers and creators have done with Punk Mambo in the Valiant universe, because she sounds like herself. He's not throwing the baby out with the bathwater by any means, and he's got her voice down in keeping with the characterization we've seen from her so far. So that's all great. And the story starts out, and it's, I wouldn't say it's paint by the numbers or predictable, but it's sort of more in line with what I expect from a Punk Mambo series. You know, she's out there fighting spirits and ghouls and whatever, and it's a well-crafted comic, but there was nothing that was really, there wasn't a hook, right? There wasn't anything where I was like, okay, I really have to read this. And then we get toward the end, and all of a sudden, Bun throws in this plot point about the Loa, right? Now we know, we saw in, was it in Ninja K? When Punk Mambo got the Loa Aizen? Or was it prior to that? I can't remember. Maybe it was the Ninja K Shadow Man crossover. But anyway, she has this Loa, obviously a different Loa than what Shadow Man has. A Loa of Doorways, I think she's called. I think it's a Loa of the female persuasion, if they even have gender. But Aizen, right? So we know that Punk Mambo has been tangentially related to the Loa, right? Not in the same way as Shadow Man, but again, Loa, it's a voodoo spirit. It's the world she lives in, so it makes a lot of sense. So you expect to see Loa. But what I didn't expect to see was at the end of the issue, and again, I'm trying not to spoil here, was the way that Bun is sort of expanding that beyond just the relationship or the dynamic between Punk Mambo and Aizen. It's something that looks to be much more rich than that. It seems like Bun and Gorum are going to explore the world of the Loa. And we did see some sort of history of the Loa and some understanding of the way it works in terms of how the Loa and Shadow Man, the relationship that they've had over the years. But again, that was all in the ancient past, right? In ancient Africa. Now we're seeing more of the current day pantheon of Loa. And I'm looking forward to learning more about it, kind of what their structure is, the way it's set up, their relationship to Punk Mambo, possibly their relationship to Shadow Man. I think all that is interesting. I think it's undermined territory in terms of telling stories in the Valiant universe. And I really can't think of too many other writers who would be better at it than Cullen Bunn. He writes supernatural stuff better than anybody, and he's just a really incredible writer. A lot of nuance to the stories he's telling, and so I was really impressed with the first issue. Again, it started out and it was okay, probably a little better than average, very well crafted. But like I said before, there was nothing that really pulled me in until we got to those last couple pages, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh yeah, I'm digging this. I'm in, basically. Before that, it was probably 50-50. I don't know if I would have kept reading it or not, but based on the strength of those last few pages, based on the little bit of mystery that Bun has introduced so far in the first issue of Punk Mambo, I'm totally in. And again, the Adam Gorum art is exceptional as well. So it comes out in April. I'm not sure the exact date. It's probably been announced, but I looked for it quickly and I didn't find it. So I will mention it again as the release date creeps closer, but it is definitely worth picking up, and it should be on your radar for sure. I know that some of the more recent Valiant stuff hasn't been really exciting Valiant fans, and I know a lot of people have been dropping off. I encourage you to keep giving it a try. At least give Valiant through the end of this year to see if this new regime can pull off what they've been trying to do. I know there's been a lot of turmoil and turnover over there, but I think they have the right people in place in the right places now. So again, I would implore you to give them a shot. They have a lot of good stuff coming up. I think the Incursion, which the first issue dropped last week, that was really done well. Alex Pacnadel loves the Eternal Warrior. It's so clear in the interview I did with him. And so I thought the first issue of that was exceptional. The fact that they have Dan Abnett and Tim Seeley doing some series coming up is really exciting. We have the Forgotten Queen title from Tinny Howard, which has been excellent. The Life and Death of Toya Harada, which I know even a lot of people who are jumping ship on Valiant are gonna hold on for that one, right? Because it's Joshua Dysart, and I expect it to be absolutely incredible. So again, I think between Livewire, Incursion, Forgotten Queen, which I love the first issue, Life and Death of Toya Harada, Punk Mambo, which I did find the release date. I guess I should have just looked at the actual solicits, right? It drops April 24th is when Punk Mambo number one hits comic shops. So again, I just implore everybody to hang on. I think good times are ahead. We have the A Forgotten World by Dan Abnett, which looks to be really, really great, getting back to 4002 and telling stories in the future with Rye. I know Ninja K or Ninjak is going to be returning in the pages of Killers from B. Clay Moore. And the other thing I want to mention is that Tim Seeley has some Valiant work coming up in the Free Comic Book Day Gold Book. So that could be the harbinger of things to come, maybe. Let me just say that with writers like Cullen Bunn and Dan Abnett, Joshua Dysart, the Valiant is still doing what they do, which is getting exceptional writers. A lot of times with artists, they're getting undiscovered talent, I would say. And a lot of times I wish they could stay at Valiant longer, because Valiant seems to give them their first shot, and then they move on to other places. You know, we saw it with Emmanuel Lupacchino. We saw it with Juan Jose Uribe. So hopefully Valiant will continue that. We'll continue that influx of great artists and really talented artists. And again, some really great writers coming up. So I just really hope that everybody gives it a chance. I know it might not be for everybody. I know it doesn't feel as new or fresh or groundbreaking as it did in 2012, but I still think that they're putting out a lot of quality titles. So let me move on and talk about Bloodshot Rising Spirit number 3. As I said, we never covered this on the podcast before, and honestly, I kind of wonder what would have happened with Bloodshot Rising Spirit had Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler not had to leave it basically before it even really got started. I haven't heard any official announcements. I think I speculated on this before, but Zach and Lonnie got basically their dream gig offered to them at Marvel to work on a ton of X-Men books, and that's kind of where their focus is right now. And so I think they were just doing like a couple of one-shots or filling in on things here or there. And then right about the same time as Bloodshot Rising Spirit, Project Rising Spirit, they got the chance to, I think they're writing, it's not X-Force because that's Ed Brisson, maybe X-Man. But anyway, that's where they're living right now. Their work's coming out through Marvel. I still think they're talented writers, and I hope they return to Valiant at some point. But again, it's just another one of those situations where some of the turnover and turmoil at Valiant has sort of hurt one of their titles. And this time it's Bloodshot Rising Spirit. So it's being written by Kevin Grievous. We still have Ken Lashley on art for issue 3, although he wasn't on the art for issue 4. So I don't know if he's left the book as well. The finishes are by Oliver Borges and Ryan Wynn. We have colors by Andrew Dollhouse and letters by Simon Boland. So we saw at the end of last issue that Bloodshot finally had supposedly accepted the memory imprint that Project Rising Spirit was trying to place on him, and they were thinking about deploying him out to the field. So issue 3 starts, and it's actually 1895 in Boston, and we're shown this narrative that leads us to believe that that's when Bloodshot was first created. And then 3 years later, he goes to Havana, Cuba, and he blows up the Maine, which was a real event in history, and basically started a war. I think that was the Spanish-American War, if I'm not mistaken. And there's some implications in the story that Bloodshot was actually responsible for the explosion that blew up the Maine, because basically America wanted an excuse to go to war with Spain beyond their suppression of the Cuban Rebellion and some other political factors that were going on. So it's interesting. So the issue started out and I'm like, wait, really? Bloodshot way back then? I mean, we've seen, Vietnam era Bloodshot. We've seen World War II era Bloodshot. So it wouldn't be a huge stretch if there was, a previous Bloodshot to that even. And what we come to find out through the course of the issue, though, is these are just more of the implanted memories. Basically, what Project Rising Spirit has implanted within Bloodshot is that, yes, he went there, he had this mission to blow up the USS Maine, and he got trapped in the wreckage, and he was only recently found. So he's basically been kind of hibernating there ever since, you know, the late 1800s. And once they were able to retrieve him, they tell him that they immersed him in a liquid nutrient bath, which resuscitated him and brought him out of the state of hibernation that he was in. So supposedly, despite what some of the other field agents of PRS and also Simon Oreck himself, despite their reservations, the doctor that's there, that's been in charge of this, Olga, she believes that this has worked. Like, despite all their setbacks and all their failures, everything that's happened, her team has finally succeeded in getting the hyper-engrammatization process to work. And so it's just a matter of time after, you know, clearly they're going to run some tests first to see if they can break this memory like we've seen happen before, where these memories get implanted, Bloodshot is kind of reliving these lives in his mind. And then at some point, the process breaks down and he sort of wakes up and realizes that, no, these memories that he's sort of reliving are not true. They're false. He's really in some, you know, high-tech lab somewhere, and it's not really reality that he's living. You know, it's like watching a movie or experiencing VR, maybe you'd say. So once all the tests have been run, a week later, we see the powers that be at Project Rising Spirit celebrating. They're ready for Bloodshot, who they refer to as a commander, because, you know, apparently he believes that he was created in 1895 and, you know, he's in the military. He has the rank of a commander. He works for Project Rising Spirit now, but still somewhat of a military man. And he's finally field ready, right? And so we see Gavin, who's sort of head of the, I guess you'd call him the A-list team of strike team of Project Rising Spirit, ask Olga if he can speak to her back in his office. And he again expresses his reservations about Bloodshot, because it's his team. It's his life and the lives of his team that are going to be on the line, right? And he's like, I'm afraid that walking machine that you call an asset is going to freak out and kill us all. So I'm asking you again, is the asset field ready? And she's like, yes. Gavin just wants to be sure. You know, he's like, no glitches, no bugs, no jack-in-the-box, pop goes to memory surprises, because the lives of my team depends on it. And Olga says, you know, believe me, we've already implanted a boatload of false memories, dozens of missions with you and your team. Tomorrow's going to be a cakewalk. And so he buys off on that. He says, okay. And so we see the following day that Gavin, Bloodshot, and the rest of the team are dispatched to rescue a hostage that's in the tallest skyscraper in Dubai, being held there by Russians. And of course, as happens in many a military operation, the intel that's given to the soldiers that are going into the field is 100% accurate. There's supposed to only be about 20 Russian soldiers or Russian troops protecting this doctor, this female doctor who's being held hostage there. But when Bloodshot and the rest of the PRS team get there, they find that the whole building is controlled by the Russians. And in the midst of trying to rescue this doctor, a grenade goes off and it knocks out the team. When Bloodshot wakes up, he's not himself. I don't know if it was the shockwave or just being in action again, but Bloodshot sort of freaks out. He's seeing things. He sees some sort of figure carrying a crying baby. He looks around and sees test tubes filled with what look to be like clones or bodies that are hooked up to a bunch of tubes. And he's wondering, where am I? He's not seeing reality. And when the rest of the team comes to, they realize that Bloodshot is in the wind and they need to contact PRS. So right from the start, right from jump, first mission, things have completely gone off the rails for Project Rising Spirit and Bloodshot. So how do I feel about the issue? Well, Bloodshot's my favorite character in Valiant. And what Jeff Lemire did, I mean, we've talked about it at length on the podcast, both when I've had Manny on and when Jesse has come on, and Lemire did an incredible job of breaking Bloodshot down and building him back up. This, and it was an incredible series, right? This is a step backward in my mind. And I guess it sort of works because it literally is a step backward in time. Because again, this takes place before even the first issue of Bloodshot from 2012. So in that way, you can sort of get away with a lot of stuff that wouldn't necessarily fly now. But the problem is that this just isn't a very compelling or interesting comic. And I've never been a big fan of Ken Lashley, but when he just does layouts like he does here, I think his art gets even worse. I think his art gets a little bit lazy is the problem. He completely has the talent and the ability to create dynamic art, but too often his art, I don't know what happens other than, like I said, it feels like the art just gets lazy and it loses some of the dynamic aspect of it. The backgrounds get really, I mean, there's barely backgrounds in a lot of these panels. Some of the panels have, you know, no background at all, but some shading, and there's a lot of just silhouette panels. And again, it just doesn't feel like completed art. It doesn't feel like quality art that I come to expect from Valiant. So that's one problem with the issue. The other is, and again, Kevin Grievous doesn't have a ton of experience writing comics. If you're not familiar with Kevin Grievous, he's the big hulking African-American werewolf from the Underworld series, which he also wrote and I think he produced, and he may even have directed some of them. So he's clearly a talented guy, and I'm actually a fan of his movie work. He has done some comic work before, but he's not a really experienced comic writer. And so I don't know if that has to do with the clunky pacing and the clunky dialogue of the issue, but it just feels like this is just another one of those titles at Valiant that because of all the turmoil and turnover there, it's not getting, or it didn't get a legitimate shot to be good, if you know what I mean. Like, it's been passed around too much. There's been too many changes. I'll kind of liken it to Harbinger Wars 2 in that way. This, now, don't get me wrong, this is a lot better than Harbinger Wars 2. It's not quite the mess that thing was, but it could possibly be saved because there are some interesting aspects here. But I think that, I think we've talked about, no matter what followed Jeff Lemire's Bloodshot run, it was going to be a really tough assignment for anybody because that's so seminal and some of the greatest Bloodshot work and stories and art that's ever been done with the character. And so whatever followed it was going to have a tough time living up to that legacy that Lemire created. So there was already either way you look at it, really high expectations for this based on the quality of what Lemire did, or a sense that there's no way this could live up to what Lemire did. So people kind of went in kind of expecting it not to be very good. And it's, I don't know if it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And you add into that the turnover and the creative teams and everything, and what you're left with is something that's a little bit disappointing, to be honest. It's not terrible, but it's not, I don't think it's worthy of the character. It needs to be better. So that's how I feel about issue 3. And if I had to say anything in particular about where it falls down, first of all, it's the art. And second of all, it's the pacing. And third, I would say the dialogue. Now, I think the dialogue in this issue is better than the dialogue was in issue 2, also done by Grievous. So it's possible that he is improving. He is, you know, picking the brain of those people that he knows, the assets that he has, you know, other comic writers that he may know, and saying, hey, you know, can you help me out with this? I'm not super experienced. I mean, I don't know. I'm speculating at this point, but I think he is improving. And I think that he's a creative guy. He's a talented guy. And I think that he could be a good comic writer given enough time. I don't know if that's where his interest lies, but I kind of tend to doubt it. I think he likes to kind of live in the Hollywood movie realm a little bit more, but I think that he does have the talent and the ability to improve. And I like I said, I did see improvement in the scripting from issue 2 to issue 3. So really, the biggest place where it can sort of take the next step is to get like one good artist, one artist that you can depend on to turn in good work without, you know, needing somebody else to help out and without cutting corners and being lazy and skimping on the backgrounds and all that. Like, let's get one artist so we can get some consistency in the art, get some consistency in the story. And again, there's still time to save this. I don't think it's ever gonna, you know, there's no way it'll ever live up to the Bloodshot Salvation or the Bloodshot Reborn stuff that Jeff Lemire did, but it could possibly approach the same kind of level and competency and level of quality that the first Bloodshot series from VEI did, you know, the Dwayne Straczynski series. It could come close to that level at least, which I really enjoyed that series. So I'm hoping for improvement. It's not unreadable. I don't know that I would necessarily recommend it to anybody, but I think that if you are a Bloodshot fan, there's stuff there. You know, I think you'll enjoy it if you're a big Bloodshot fan. I think if you know absolutely nothing about Bloodshot and you're a little bit of a younger reader, you might also enjoy it because, again, there's not a lot of complexity here. It does seem to, I don't want to say it's dumbed down or it's talking down, but it does seem to be painting sort of an origin of Bloodshot in sort of a simplistic way, if you will. And maybe that's what they're aiming for. You know, maybe they want to have a series they can point to when the Vin Diesel movie comes out and they can say for, you know, 10 to 14-year-old boys and girls, hey, go read this, and it's going to kind of tell you the origin of Bloodshot. Again, I don't know. It's all speculation on my part. But this does seem to be a little bit more of not a very sophisticated story, if you know what I mean. And us Valiant readers, we've been really spoiled with writers like, you know, Matt Kent and Jeff Lemire and Joshua Dysart that we sort of come to expect these sort of complicated narratives that are really exploring high concept stuff. I mean, especially when you talk about Harbinger and the stuff Joshua Dysart has done, you know, exploring utilitarianism and, you know, utopias and the haves and the have-nots and all that kind of stuff. So this is not that level of storytelling. I don't think it ever could be. I don't think it was meant to be. You know, you have to take it for what it is. It's Bloodshot. It's Valiant. So I'm going to read it. Is it my favorite Bloodshot? No. It's probably some of my least favorite Bloodshot, actually. But again, there is potential there. So I'm not giving up on it yet. You know, just like I was talking about before when I was saying that Valiant has a lot of good titles coming over the next few months, and not to give up, I'm not going to, you know, give up on Bloodshot Rising Spirit just yet. So that being said, let me say a few words about issue number 4, which comes out this week on the 27th. It's same writer, Kevin Grievous, handling the writing duties. We have art for pages 1 through 10 by Harvey Talabo. We have art from pages 11 through 20 by Isaac Goodhart. Colors are by Andrew Dollhouse. Letters are by Simon Bolin. And it picks up right where issue 3 left off. Bloodshot's in the wind. The rest of the PRS team is trying to locate him. This is a really action-packed issue. This is the first issue I've read of Bloodshot Project Rising Spirit that I feel like the pacing is done well. And maybe that's just because it's like fast-paced the whole way through because there's so much action. It's just like pedal to the metal, go, go, go. And it's not flipping back and forth, you know, between flashbacks and false memories and all that kind of stuff. It's just a straightforward narrative. And as I said, it's really fast-paced. We see early hardcore here show up. We see the team introduced, and we see Bloodshot at the end get ready to confront them. The art, again, you have two different artists on here. Their art styles aren't completely different. They're different enough to know the difference. I'm not sure whose art I prefer more. I think maybe Isaac Goodhart, except when it comes to Bloodshot. I think Harvey Talabo actually draws Bloodshot himself better, but Goodhart draws everything else better. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know who the artist is on Bloodshot Project Rising Spirit number 5. But I do feel like this is a step in the right direction. It gives me hope that the story is improving. And again, I don't know if it's just Kevin Grievous getting more comfortable. I don't know if he is, you know, reaching out to other people he knows, as I mentioned, who write comics and asking for advice. But this, like, if this is improvement over issue 3, which was an improvement over issue 2. I think if you read issue 2 and you read issue 4, you'll see vast improvement. The scripting and the pacing especially are very much improved. I think the final step here to make this a book that I would be able to recommend would be to get a consistent artist on the title. And whether that'll happen or not, I just don't know. Again, this title has been plagued by some issues with creative personnel and turnover and all that. So I'm in till the end here. I think that it will serve as sort of an easy to understand origin, because again, it's not super complicated for a Bloodshot. And I do wonder if we'll see the hardcore show up in the Bloodshot movie that's coming out next year from Sony. That would be a pretty interesting aspect to add to the movie. So again, I think it's worth reading. If you haven't picked up any of Bloodshot Project Rising Spirit yet, the way I'd recommend you pick it up is in trade. You'll be able to get the first trade's not out yet, but when the first volume is done, you'll be able to pick up that trade for, $9.99, like all Valiant Volume 1 trades are. They're only $10. And then you could, have a big chunk of story, read it all at once, and hopefully the first volume comes to a satisfying conclusion. So I'm hanging in there. Again, it has gotten better, and I'm starting to become actually curious about the story and see where it goes. We obviously know, being that this is a prequel, that we know where Bloodshot's going to end up at the end of this, right? Where the Dwayne Szczerzinski Bloodshot series started in 2012. So it's not going to be a big surprise or a big cliffhanger ending or something that we don't expect. So we know where we end up. So this title is really all about the journey, which I suppose in a way was something that was kind of working against it, because you sort of lose an element of surprise if we kind of know how it ends up, right? But doesn't mean you can't tell a good story. Doesn't mean that if you're a Bloodshot fan, you won't enjoy it. So I do, again, recommend picking it up in trade. I think it is worth checking out. And, try it out for yourself. Let me know what you think. So I think that's going to do it for this episode. I will say that Incursion came out last week and was absolutely excellent. I was going to talk about that this week as well, but I want to wait until I can have Jesse come on to talk about it in detail as well. We did give our first impressions when we first got the preview copy, but I want to do a complete breakdown of Incursion number 1 and dive a little bit deeper into the issue. So look for that probably next Sunday. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platforms you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.